It's the Bill Murphy Show, a daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
Indeed, for another Friday, Music Friday, for July 24th, 2010, brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack. Fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl drinks. Lulu's in Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. It is Music Friday, and it is the first time that we are going with a group Music Friday. Not just one, not two, but four musicians on with us at the same time. And not only that, but in a tour bus on the way to New Hampshire. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us today, I'm going to have them introduce themselves to you. As they tour in the Happy Together Tour 25th anniversary, we've got four members of the band that are behind all the bands that play in the Happy Together Tour. Now, here's what we want to do, guys. Since you're on the bus and you're like surrounding a speakerphone, let's do it like they do on Monday Night Football when the defensive line introduces themselves and where the college they came from. So we'll go like Bill Murphy, piano, Plantation, Florida. Whoever's to my left, start.
Steve Murphy, drums and vocals, Plantation High.
Plantation High.
Godfrey Townsend, guitar and vocals and a little piano. Christ the King High School, Middle Village, Queens, New York.
Awesome.
Emmanuel Focarazzo, Junior. Piano, keyboard. Steve's telling me what to say. Agnes High School, Rockville Center, New York.
Next.
John Montagna, LaGuardia High School of Music and Art in New York City, bass, guitar, and vocal.
Beautiful. I think I think John did the best job of the four of you guys. That was very professional, brother.
Oh, yeah. One more.
Don't try to flash.
Mark Lindsay, a left tackle vocalist. Weezer, Idaho.
Weezer, Idaho. Well, we've got a good deal of the Happy Together Tour, the 25th anniversary, from the tour bus, and we finally got Steve Murphy on the show, the name that's mentioned on the show more than anybody for the first 6 weeks, man. You guys are having a good time, as usual, I take it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't suck, but, I mean, there's, you know, we'll keep it at that it doesn't suck, but it's been great. There's been glitches here and there, but we got three shows in the can. Is that it? And we just played the local show, the Brooklyn Seaside Heights concert series at Astor Levy Park, right in Coney Island in Brooklyn, and quite the turnout it was.
And how was the weather in Coney Island?
It was balmy.
Not as balmy as it usually is.
Nah, we usually a sweat fest. It wasn't so bad, but we had a huge turnout, big success. Unfortunately, we had to leave as the Beach Boys were getting into their third or fourth song.
Oh, wow.
They were the headliners on the show.
They were opening.
All right. They were opening after us. They opened up the show after we left.
Very well put. So you guys are coming to Florida, and then so a lot of listeners in South Florida will be able to catch this tour, the Happy Together Tour, Thursday night. That would be the 29th of July. So... Wow, you're going from Coney Island to New Hampshire, and then where before you get to Florida?
We got Cape Cod Melody Tent, which is up in Cape Cod. Cohasset, Massachusetts, yeah. After the second gig in Massachusetts in Cohasset, then we head down to Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, cool. And then we'll see you guys on the 29th. You know what's really funny? You guys looked on the website to see what time the concert started, and it said show starts at 6:30, doors at 7:30.
That's awesome.
You're playing at an awesome venue. That place has had some great shows lately. Have you played there yet? Oh, were you guys there once already?
Yeah, we did Hippie Fest there, I think, 2 years ago with when Mountain closed the show. And it's interesting that we played there on the 29th of July, and then we finished the Hippie Fest tour on the 29th of August at Broward Center. So it seems like 29th South Florida is the are the key words there.
28th.
No, not the 20th. Mark, but you know, we'll call you when we need you. All right.
That's Steve Murphy, drummer from the Happy Together, backline part of the band. We're going to get into this because I think tonight what we're going to do is come up with a name for you guys, because I think you're like sort of a modern touring, you know, the band that backed everybody in the Motown days, you know what I'm talking about?
The Funk Brothers.
Right, exactly. Modern day Funk Brothers. So, I mean, I think you guys need a name. Have you guys come up with like a nickname for what your outfit is? Because first of all, let's let John Montagna answer this question specifically. Taking any combination of the guys that are on this bus right now, who are the names? Because I know this list could go on probably several dozen incredible names that you guys have backed up either together or two or three of you at the same time.
Let's see. We got Alan Parsons, Todd Rundgren, and Wilson.
Guy from the Cadillacs.
Guy from the Cadillacs. Christopher Cross, Joey Mollin from Badfinger, Denny Lane, Wing. Mark Farner from Grand Funk.
Felix Cavalieri
from the Rascals.
Wow. Denny Lane, you said that?
No. I did not say Denny Lane.
I said
Joey.
Said him. Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night.
Mark Mickey
from Ball Bear the Raiders.
Mickey Collins from the Monkees. Jonathan Edwards, the Turtles, the Grassroots, the Buckingham.
Jack Bruce.
John Entwistle.
Unbelievable. Did everybody get all that? That's just an amazing roster if you think about it. I mean, and Mark Lindsay's on the bus with you guys from Paul Revere and the Raiders. Mark, I mean, what is it like playing in front of these guys? It's like it's playing in front of a karaoke machine almost, right?
They're a very good band.
Couldn't have said it better.
It's one of the best bands I've played with all day.
they're
awesome.
That's all we're getting out of them.
Yeah, we're getting that out of them. That's all you're gonna get out of me tonight.
See, I don't even think. I think we've been trying to be too official here. I should just leave the mic open and let you guys do what you do when you're on your way from Coney Island to New Hampshire for 6 hours on a tour bus and just listen in.
You don't want to see what's going on now. it's a lot of fucking laughs, actually. A lot of laughing.
And so you occupy your time. I'm sure a lot of people imagine what they would do in such a situation. And you really got to find some stuff to kill some time. DVDs, video games, all of the above. I mean, is it card games? Any poker games being played? Any money exchanging hands?
Building Stratocasters. Let's see. Godfrey's putting together a Hendrix Monterey Strat right now. He actually assembled a good deal of it about 20 minutes ago, sitting, bouncing all over 95. But
inventing new apps for iPhone.
doing whatever it is to keep ourselves occupied. We haven't even broken out the DVDs. Yeah, we're on a bus that's just about the same age as John Montagna.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's
which one looks better.
Guess which one looks better,
man. Yeah, he's a lot closer to my age, I promise you.
Right. Oh, boy. This could be the first tour bus. This could be Fisher-Price, my first tour bus.
So it has... So does it have red, round headlights on the front? Is it that old?
Headlights. I haven't even noticed that. Yeah. You could.
It's got a crank on the front bumper.
Let me give you an indication of the age of this bus. I checked out the mileage on the bus, and the mileage that this bus has traveled is equivalent to traveling around the world 36 times, or traveling to the moon and back 4 times. Or, no wait, this one's the best. Traveling at the speed of light for 5 seconds. That is how many miles are on this bus that we are on right now. So let anyone out there wants to do some quick math on those three examples for the formula, have fun. That's something. This thing has been around.
Or you know what else they can do? They can look on my Facebook page and
see the exact number.
12 hours. Well, they can see the exact number on my Facebook page. I actually took a picture of the odometer. Yeah, I'm going to be posting the next time I have an internet connection.
Of course, the bus is older than him.
Right. Because,
yeah. But one of the luxuries about it is that every bunk has its own individual reel-to-reel player.
Except for the premium one that has an 8-track and a laser disc.
That's fantastic.
In the suite. That's the suite.
It sounds to me like you entertain yourselves even more than you watch or play with anything while you're on the bus.
What had happened was the original bus we were supposed to get broke down. So they had to give us this one because there's no other buses right now because everyone's out touring.
Behind the touring season, so it's, you know, the tour buses are in use.
So we spent the first night of the tour, this is great, spent the first night of the tour in Philadelphia after our show expecting the bus that broke down, no, the replacement bus for the bus that broke down to be outside our venue in Philadelphia
by 1 a.m.
Cut to 7:25 a.m. when the bus finally pulled up, and we had everyone sitting on the stage, drinking beer. We had Mark, Lindsay, and his wife Deb were asleep on the actual drum riser that I played on.
Wow!
Several hours waiting for this bus to show up. It was that's how we kicked off this tour.
So those are the glitches of which you speak.
Yes. So waiting for the replacement bus. That took a mere 6 to 7 hours longer to arrive than we expected it. But all's well.
This one has a working Victrola in the back lounge.
Manny says it has a working Victrola in the back lounge.
So Steve, yeah. Godfrey, John, and Manny, now you guys have been on part of several of the Hippie Fest tours over the last few years, and I guess a few Happy Together tours now. Is this how many Happy Together tours for you guys now?
Before we talk about that, I want to make one more joke about the bus before I forget it.
Absolutely.
While we were parked at the venue, I opened up the hood, and there was a parrot inside that looked up at me and said, "It's a living." So now, what was your question again, Bill?
Anybody else got one before we move on?
I think that one you can't pop that.
Mark Martin.
No, dude.
Get up. It's a living.
There's a hamster on a wheel.
Funniest part of that is John opening the hood.
Right. Will John be opening
hood. The hood? Funniest part of that is a hood existing on a bus.
John,
that's how old the bus is. That's a hood.
Cool bus. Right. They checked in the sleeping children before they brought it to
sign on the back is careful.
All right, let's get back to curriculum here.
No, it's okay. It's perfectly fine. I was just going to ask about the process of having to, every season, every tour, every summer, it seems like you're working with another set of bands. You're constantly having to learn old songs and learn them. I don't know. Talk about the process. How does that start? Who decides what songs you're going to do, and then where and how do you guys rehearse and arrange them and that kind of thing? Who's the architect of that whole process?
Let me interject this thing. This is Mark Lindsay. The reason they have to learn so much is nobody wants to work on them more than once.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
No, just kidding. 5 acts on this tour, and everybody submitted anywhere from 7 to 10 songs, so there has to be a lot of them. So we had to learn about 40 songs for this tour.
Now, individually or together, or just at first you guys kind of do it on your own and then get together at the end?
Yeah, we learn them individually.
Started that way.
And then we get together maybe at my studio or something like that and have one full day rehearsal. And that'll pretty much, take care of it. And, the first couple of shows might be a little shaky, but we usually get it, slamming.
Godfrey, do you set any sort of rules as far as how true you stay to the original arrangement and the sound of the original instruments and how much you do on your own and modernize? Who decides? Are there any rules as far as that goes?
All of the artists usually submit a live CD of, their bands and the way they do the material. So
right.
For like arrangements and keys or whatever, if the keys are going to be different than the records, original records.
Yeah, but we definitely revert back to the original recording for
sound, the imperative groove things, the integral,
of the record.
The mystique.
Well,
biggest mystique was doing the tour.
So, you know what it is? Personally, I feel like when people come to a concert, especially a concert like this, which is like a nostalgic thing, they like to be able to hear what they remember as being the song the way they heard it back in the day when they first heard it.
Yeah.
So we try to pull out that authenticity of the original studio recording and in a live setting, you know?
It's naturally going to sound different from the record just because of...
Just we're using more than one mic.
We're using more than one mic.
Right, right.
And
we're using a Spector bass and
coming out of a PA system as opposed to a fold up turntable.
Right. Now, on that note, though, that's great. I love this stuff. Now, I guess this question would be directed mostly to Godfrey and Manny, and that is, when you are trying to capture some of those songs on the old records, do you ever have any fun, like, creating a vintage sound or going and getting a special piece of equipment to try to get the exact, I don't know, B3 sound in Manny's case, or Godfrey, some wobbly guitar that's, you have to kind of recreate? How much fun do you have with that?
Well, I mean, for me, it's really, a lot of the stuff is clean guitar. Sound right if you had, really, really super distorted guitar. Manny's always been just impeccable at getting a sound that was there originally, you know? So he's always...
A lot of the stuff is piano and organ bass. I got,
I got a
piano organ. So I get to play those really cool organ parts, you know what I mean? That are on the songs.
I guess it's more about... A lot of going on, yeah.
The end of Arizona. We'll
no.
I'm sorry, in the Indian Reservation, that's correct.
And that's how Mark Lindsay described it to Manny, what he wanted him to play. How does that part go? Said Mark, tell him.
Believe it up. Believe it up. Believe me, believe that, believe dee 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 da.
But no, that's exactly it. No, and Manny just nails all the sounds and all the parts. We nail as much as we can, and then we, integrate a little bit of our own personalities. Like, that's just inevitable to happen, you know? I mean, we play it, some stuff heavier, some stuff lighter, a little more dynamic, a little less, whatever it is.
Actually, the most fun of it is recreating the vocal parts. Because,
oh, yeah.
All this music is about vocals, harmonies, and whatever, and we're all singers, and we just love being able to recreate as much of that as possible. You know, when the audience digs it too, you can see it in their faces, you know.
And one thing that we figured out, actually, on the first leg is that when we do the background vocals, we sing them with the same phrasing that was on the original records.
Right, right.
To bring you down, you kind of have to add in that sort of good thing, baby. Like all of us together doing that, it brings out a different kind of character. I think it's more about what we don't do. Like, we don't come in with, fluorescent yellow guitars with scalloped frets running everything through, a Rockman.
Right.
Add, like, easy modern sounds to the new songs. We just try to keep everything pure. I put a set of flat wound strings on my bass for this one.
Right.
Because
that's what was prevalent then and on most of the records that the people had listened to.
Most of the records, round wounds were still sort of, they weren't the standard yet. When I started going in and listening to the bass parts on these songs to get the specific lines, I just started hearing like the thumpy flat wound thing, and I thought the only way I'm going to really be able to get the character of these songs is to put flats on.
Yes.
I play a Spector bass, which is a fairly modern bass compared to like a jazz or a precision or whatever, but I got to say the flats really make a big difference.
The strings and most importantly the way you play it too, that's really what makes the sound of this.
Matching the phrasing of the player, but it's about half and half of learning the parts off the record and playing it like the record, but I've also got a responsibility to lock in with Steve and just create a tight pocket, you know. And I mean, not just with Steve, with everybody. But once you've got the parts down, then it's time to just play as a band and connect with each other and respond to the audience. So that's what kind of brings it into the modern age, is the fact that, like, we are all here in the presence.
I think the fact that you guys all respect that and recreate as much as you possibly can is... because you understand that all these songs are indelibly printed in these people's heads, and they know exactly how all these little intricacies go, and for you to accept, yeah, you know, accept that and make it work is why all these bands enjoy working with you guys, you know?
People have very specific memories attached to these songs, so you kind of have a responsibility to deliver them authentically, but you also need to remind them that they are, you know, that it is the present day, so you can inject a little bit of your own personality.
Speaking of injecting, Mark has something to say. So, Mark, go ahead.
That's interjecting.
I've worked with thousands of musicians, literally, over the years, and this is probably the most authentic as to creating or recreating the groove, what was in the groove of those original records. These guys really do it well, mainly because they're all great musicians, plus, as someone said, I forget now because I'm digging a hole, they're all singers, and the backgrounds were so important on these records. But they really are true to their school. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's great to hear from Mark Lindsay. I mean, you've played with so many people. I didn't even want to say what year you started recording, because it's actually just an incredibly impressive number. 1960. You've played with so many bands. So to hear that from you is high praise.
To me, Mark. One of our jobs, we have a few, one of our jobs is to make sure that the person that we're working with is satisfied with what we're doing. You know what I mean? And then the other job after that is to make sure that the audience is satisfied.
So how much progress have you made from Coney Island to New Hampshire? Where are you?
Oh, it's a really, you know what, we might have to get the iPad out and look at the little blue, bouncing blue dot.
I think just went across the Brooklyn Bridge.
Just went across the Brooklyn Bridge. No, I think... Let's look. Where are we at? Brookfield, New Milford, Connecticut is up and coming.
Okay.
Pretty soon we'll be in New Milford, Connecticut, so that's not bad.
A town full of MILFs.
No, that's New Milful.
Oh.
MILFville.
That's a MILFful to say.
MILFful. By the way,
It's New Guilford. No, it said Milford.
Oh, Milford is another.
Where we are now.
New Milford.
Is it New Milford?
I think it said New Milford.
So a little bit about the bands that are playing in this Happy Together tour, which will be here at the Hard Rock Live, when I say here, South Florida, at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Now, you got the... Talk a little bit about each act that's in it and... You know, I guess a highlight or two of what goes on with each separate act.
Okay, well, we opened the show with the Buckinghams.
Kind of a drag.
Who were a big...
Kind of a drag, yep.
Yeah, they were a big part of that 60s...
It's not kind of a drag, though, playing with them. It's way better than kind of drag playing with them.
It's not a drag at all.
What's kind of funny and interesting about them is that they had a name like the Buckinghams, which almost... led you to believe that they were from England.
Absolutely.
They're from Chicago. And they even told us that when the first time they played on, like, Ed Sullivan or something like that, that the backdrop was all Union Jack flags behind them.
Right.
Because it was British invasion time, so why not, you know, capitalize?
So, you know, we do a couple of their songs, Susan and Hey Baby, and they do a version of... Mercy, Mercy, Mercy.
Well, Mercy, Mercy, Mercy. That was the popular version, I believe. But, yeah, the one that I...
The vocal version.
Yeah, the vocal version, correct. There's an instrumental of Mercy, Mercy, Mercy that's kind of a standard in a rock, yeah. Kind of a funk rock standard thing.
We do... the cover we do is... they do a version of Expressway to Your Heart, which was actually Soul Survivors was the original version.
Yeah, and
they're just kind of slamming.
Yeah, that's a funky, funky slamming, like, in-your-face, just go for it tune. That's the highlight of that set, I would say, besides, of course, Kind of a Drag. But these guys, Carl G. Morisi and Nick Fortune, are the two original members that we're playing with. They're just a total blast to play with. The guys are the nicest guys. Yeah, the greatest. And avid golfers. At least Nick is a newly avid golfer. Only been playing about a year, and they've yet to step up to the plate and, head to the links with me, but I'm sure that's going to happen sooner or later.
And then we got after that? We got
Grassroots.
Mark.
Oh, no, now we have Grassroots. We don't have a Mark. We were going Buckingham's, but now we're going Buckingham's Grassroots Mark. Okay, switch the order, that's all.
Yeah, so the Grassroots are going second, and, they have some great
songs.
Great songs. Can't remember one of them anymore.
Can't remember one of them.
No.
Midnight Confession.
Temptation Eyes.
Sooner or Later.
Live for Today.
And Millionaires. And Where Were You When I Needed You are the other two that
and
we do.
Midnight Confession, which I played when I was a kid on my friend's aunt's Emily organ.
Wow.
Your friend's aunt.
Yes.
Emily organ.
They're just a blast to play with, of course, as well.
And on Mark, and then Mark Lindsay of Paul Revere and the Raiders comes after that. Is he still around there in the bus, Mark?
He is right here.
No, he got off the bus. What am I thinking?
Hello there.
Mark, I just wanted to go one place with you here. I just wanted to take you back for a second to when Indian Reservation made it to number one on the charts. I always get curious and want to hear what goes on inside the mind of someone who realizes they have a number one song and you hear it on the radio as the number one song in the country, like for the first time. What can you relive a little bit of that feeling at all?
Well, actually, it was a lot like being in Caldwell, Idaho, and hearing our first record, which was Beatnik Sticks, which was a piano instrumental. It was being played on the radio, and that was such a thrill. I mean, it was just a semi-hit that nobody ever heard of, but it was incredible. So by the time Indian Reservation came along to number one, it took so long to make it. It was on the charts for about 4 months.
Uh-huh.
But to reach that level, number one, it's pretty heady stuff.
It just it holds so much more weight when it happens back then. I mean, I think it's lost its flavor today, obviously. It's just that magical feeling from back then.
There's like 12 different charts now.
Right.
I mean, like, what's the number one song in the country?
Who knows, right?
I don't know either.
Right.
And you've got a number one country song, a number one pop song, a number one rock song, number one adult contemporary.
Right. That was my point. It's like it's not as special now as it was back then, and it never will be. And that's the pioneer days of songs becoming number one hits anyway. You know what I mean?
This is Mark Lindsay again. I think a bigger thrill than being number one was the fact, I mean, you can only go to number one, so then it was the competition was how many records did it sell, and Indian Reservation sold 10 million. Of course, we got paid for four.
Right.
that was a pretty big charge.
Go to number one.
You can't go past number one.
I don't know about the CBS records.
Yeah,
it was the number one.
Yeah, it was actually the biggest selling single in the history of CBS Records until Michael Jackson came along with Billie Jean. But we're not going to bug him about that because he can't answer for himself now. So we'll just leave that one where it is.
Well, I mean,
anyway, it's big stuff.
Is Columbia Records at all grateful for the fact that you actually hold the status being the first rock group they ever signed? I mean, you really kind of made Columbia become a label that went in that direction. Or were you ever recognized for that later?
Yeah, Mitch Miller hated us.
That's beautiful.
True, right?
No, Mitch Miller signed us under protest. And the only reason we got signed is because the Beach Boys were making such big noise over on Capitol and all the indie labels were having big hits. And so somebody at CBS said, well, we need one of them rock and roll guys.
Yeah.
So they hired us. And actually, Mitch filled our first record, which was Louie Louie, which we had a version of that was hitting up and down the West Coast, and he killed it because he thought, the rock and roll was a passing fad, so he told his promotion guys to kill the record, which they did. 6 months later, it got played by WMEX in Boston, and of course, no one could understand the lyrics, so they made up their own, got banned in Boston, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow.
But But Mitch didn't keep that gig too long after that. For some reason, rock and roll kind of had more legs than Mitch did.
Now, Mark, later you went on to do some pretty memorable national commercial jingles. Could you dig one up from the 70s or 80s that we might recognize and sing a bar to?
Silver bird, won't you fly me away? Get on your Yamaha today, baby.
Yeah!
Beautiful. Nice. Very nice.
Woo!
That's Mark Lindsay from Paul Revere and the Raiders on the bus with the... It's pretty cool for one of the headline guys to hang out with the backline band, eh, guys?
Yeah, well,
I wouldn't have it any other way.
He lowers himself because that's the kind of guy he is.
I have to remind these guys how the charts go, so I would stay on the bus with them, and we rehearse constantly.
That's beautiful. Even I know that's not true at all. Now, Mark, you were a radio guy and also doing an internet radio show at one point, too, right? Weren't you known as Mark After Dark?
That's right, Bill. I certainly was.
There you go. Give it to us, brother. Tell us a little bit about that. How did that happen?
Guys are brothers.
No, it was. I always wanted to be a DJ when I was a kid. Although I loved music, but I thought, nah, you know, I looked at this geeky-looking guy with glasses in the mirror. I thought, it's never going to happen. So I thought, well, maybe I could hide behind the mic. So I went to the radio station, KGM, in Boise, Idaho, and used to rip off the AP copy and go home and say, Washington, Secretary of State, Dallas, see if I could be an announcer. Of course, I couldn't, but I always wanted to. And as luck would have it, we moved to Portland, Oregon. There was a spot open on a radio station, and I jumped in and got my feet wet. For 3 years, I was happy as a pig in grain.
And we're all still here too, Billy. Just, we're still here on the bus with Mark.
Especially Manny. Manny's extremely here.
All right, then who comes after Mark Lindsay and with Paul Revere and the Raiders? Then you have Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees.
Oh, that's right. We're still going through the show. So then we got Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees, who's probably the loudest singing human being breathing on the planet.
Wow.
Right. Oh, yeah. Most powerful voice I've ever heard.
Very, very powerful.
Could definitely sing the paint off of the walls in any room. Just walk in a room and just strip the fucking room of paint with his voice.
We did a vocal rehearsal with him.
Yeah.
He could sing a baby through a park bench.
Make any sense at all, but it's still funny and sick all at the same time. But it's actually pretty true.
Yeah, no, we were running the vocals. After the big full band rehearsal, we all got together in a dressing room with guitar, you know, to kind of run the harmony parts. And Mickey was doing like full-on stage performances of all the songs. Like singing like at the top of his voice, even though we were just like sitting in a room with an acoustic guitar, he was still singing with like all of the power. Mickey has one volume.
Yeah.
Right. But it's very good, and it's impressive.
Powerful.
It's powerful.
Ranged.
He likes us too, by the way.
Yeah. Almost as much as Mark. But then there's so Mickey's kicking some ass, and then the stories are great, and sometimes there's an intermission. No, the intermission is after the Grassroots, right?
Yeah.
And so, or after Mark. I mean, Mark Lindsay from Barbara and the Raiders. And then we come on with the Happy Together guys, the Turtles, that of the namesake of the tour, and Mark and Howard, forget it, unbelievable. Those guys are just the funnest to play with, the funnest two guys to be on stage with you can ever imagine. The hits are, you know, numerous as well with him. I mean, Monkees, we don't have to see, we're talking about, you know, Last Train to Clarksville and, you know, everything, whatever. All of them.
B-Lover.
But as far as the Turtles go, you know, you have, of course, Happy Together. You have Eleanor. You have She'd Rather Be With Me.
You showed me B-Babe.
We did some Zappa. We have a little Zappa surprise for any of you Zappa fans out there.
Hmm.
That we throw down some cool Zappa with their, you know, from their time with, as you know, with Mother's Invention. So it's a blast. And Mark Bowman is more classic every night with his, it's either his Doors, his Jim Morrison thing, or his Bruce Springsteen.
There's a decent amount of shtick that goes on between Mark and Howard, Mark
yeah.
Bowman and Howard Kalin. And it's interesting to watch guys who have been on stage together for over 40 years. They've been working together on stage. So their timing with each other is impeccable. And they really play off each other so well. It's amazing to watch guys that have been at it for that long still got it. All these guys still got like incredible chops and stage chops and performance energy to keep up with. Very inspirational. Very exciting.
Let me just say that besides performing with these guys on stage every night, one of the incredible things is hanging with them in the downtime hours and just hearing them tell different stories or explain different things that had gone on. And you get to see firsthand and hear firsthand how it all, you piece it all together and see how it all came about, you know,
yes.
Like Mark just did with a couple of little things that he just told us. We get that all day long, like,
oh, yeah,
every day. And we just go, oh, wow, man, yeah, that's how that happened. Wow.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure you even hear little intricate details about how the songs were created and the stories behind, you know, putting the songs together while you guys are putting them together again, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's stories about all the songs we created, but also stories about what happened on the road, what happened with record labels, and just you get insight into the music business and the entertainment business in general. You get insights into how the business works that you normally wouldn't get from, you know, a behind the music documentary or from someone's biography or whatever. Hearing someone describe, you know, yeah, so we were on this bus for 8 hours, and then, you know, one musician to another, you know, but the musician happens to be
so. What was it like again, that
like
Cavalcade of Stars tour? K&H Productions tour or what?
Hey,
it was, what did you say, like the seats on the bus?
It was like there were no bunks in the old buses. There were just seats like a school bus. But I was a skinny guy, so I got up the luggage rack. And I rode comfortably.
So, John, let me ask you this question. Since you've been around all these guys of Mark's stature and guys that have had number one hits and guys that had labels, deals for years and years, you heard Mark tell a little bit about jokingly, I'm sure half jokingly, but half serious, about Indian Reservation selling 10 million, but they only got paid for 4. Does it seem to you, as you see these guys and tour with them, the you know, dozens and dozens of them, that they all seem to have the same kind of story? And does it give you an insight as to how the industry worked, you know?
Put it this way, I haven't met anyone that said to me, I've never been screwed. Everyone's always been on the up and up with me. You've always gotten every dollar that I deserve to get. To anyone who's been in the business long enough has, you know, it's almost like a rite of passage.
Right.
When you're in the music, you know, not just music, any avenue of show business. The first couple of things that you do for nothing. I've heard the comedians, first couple of open mics they do, move from an open mic to like, okay, we'll give you, you know, come down tomorrow night, and then you sit there waiting and waiting and waiting to go on, and you bought tickets that you have to sell. You know, everybody gets screwed in the beginning. And then,
did I ever tell you about the biker barbecue that we played where we got paid in meat?
That's a true story, actually.
And, Mark, what were you going to say?
And we're all vegetarians.
That is the kicker. All of this is completely true.
Okay, here, Mark.
Yeah, in the record business, speaking for myself and most everybody I know, you're so anxious to make, when they say, you could make a record with us. You know, you don't say, how much do I get? You say, how much do I have to pay you to put out my records? I mean, that's how you feel. So you don't even read the contract. You don't care.
Right.
We make records, man.
And so everybody did that, and everybody got taken advantage of. So it wasn't so much the record companies are just consuming everybody. It was just that it was just lack of knowledge going into it. You know what I mean?
You want to see something really pretty heavy duty? Watch the behind the scenes about Badfinger.
Yeah, Joey Mullen, we did mention, who we're going out with. Yeah, he's a guy that's led a pretty rough life, put it that way.
And he's still a fun guy to work with.
Funny, he's totally professional.
Yeah.
Total pro.
stage, nails it every single time.
And Joey, when you every time you see Joey performing, you just tell it's all coming from his heart. He just loves it when he does it anyway, so it probably never mattered to him what he was being paid.
Oh, no. He cared about the new Les Paul that he picked up. That's his most, he just loves being on stage. He loves the camaraderie and everything. He's a great guy.
Yeah, Joey travels with us on the bus whenever we tour.
Yeah. Like Mark Lindsay,
composer of the Raiders.
I know, I had to. That's the only way to do it. Because I can't say from the guy from Glory of the Raiders feature, but I can't say that because it's about him.
Oh, wait, so you're not just mocking me for saying that earlier? You're just saying that yourself now?
I'm mocking Mark himself. He says it on stage. It's a lot of fun stuff that Mark does on stage that, we make fun of, behind his back, like you do.
So, Mark, how many times have you been called Paul by fans that didn't know better?
That's a good question.
Well, more often in the early, well, actually, it still happens today because people say, well, gee, Paul, I like your music. I'm not Paul, I'm Mark. Well, why aren't you Paul? Aren't you the lead singer? Yeah.
Why aren't you Paul?
Why aren't you Paul? Because I don't play piano. It's very much like...
I don't ride a horse.
Yeah, it's very much like Dave Clark 5, where Mike Smith was the lead singer.
Right.
But Dave had the name.
Or it's sort of like a Jethro Tull kind of thing, but not really, because you weren't just using the Paul Revere name. You had a member of the band that was Paul Revere. So
I'm the Jethro and Paul's the Tull.
There you go.
On Parsons Project as well.
Right.
There was, a lot of mysteries to who Alan Parsons was, right?
You were called Alan.
Yes, they called me Alan in Mexico.
Alan.
I know you.
I know you.
There was that, too. There was one guy, I forget what country we were in, but we were all waiting. We were leaving the airport, so we were all pushing our smart carts with our luggage and stuff, and we're all in line. we're waiting to get out the door through customs or whatever, and there's a customs
South America,
and there's a customs guard like kind of standing off to the side with his arms crossed, and he keeps looking at me and pointing and smiling, going, "I know you," because we all had our guitars and stuff. "I know who you are." Finally, he just goes, "You are Andy Kidd." "I know you." But meanwhile, Andy Gibb was already dead for 9 years. The news hadn't reached South America yet.
And on that note, that lovely little story by Godfrey Townsend, I guess I'll let you guys get back to your poker game or whatever it is that you're going to do for the rest of the ride to New Hampshire.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
We've been talking to Godfrey Townsend, John Montagna, Manny Fogarazzo, and Steve Murphy, as well as Mark Lindsay from Paul Revere and the Raiders. Who will all be here as part of the Happy Together tour when it hits Hard Rock Live at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. That's Thursday night, July 29th. Tickets are $54, $44, and $34. And the Hard Rock Live is a great venue. 7:30 show for the Happy Together tour. You'll get to see all these bands and have a great time. Wear your tie-dye shirts and dance in the aisles and have a good time with these guys. Thanks, you guys. Have a safe trip the rest of the way.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Log on each weekday for another edition of The Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's M-U-R-P-H at BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.